picture an alternate Earth, a reflection of our own, but with one key difference. The existence of individuals referred to as metahumans. These beings first manifested during the Second World War. No rhyme or reason to their appearance. No explanation as to what did or didn't result in a human manifesting these abilities. Once the war was over, many of the Nazi metahumans were unaccounted for, and remain so to this day. There was also a realization that the population may start to fear the very people they revered as heroes. And so, the Global Echo Organization was formed. An organization for metahumans, owned by metahumans, but run by a human CEO, and governed by a strict charter detailing how and when metahuman powers could be employed. Some countries declined to join, most notably Russia and North Korea. But except for those exceptions, every country had an echo base of operations. They acted as an independent peacekeeping force, whose primary goal is to police rogue metahumans. Science still has no explanation for or understanding of what causes these manifestations, though it has spent years and billions of dollars trying to unravel the mystery. Then, 7 months ago, an as of then unknown enemy attacked the Earth. Over the course of several hours, metal power armored troopers, wielding devastating energy weapons and wearing the swastika, struck every major city worldwide. The attack was brutal, the troopers organized, but the targets random. The troopers merely marched through a location, destroying everything in their path. Large metal spheres filled the air, providing air support with energy cannons and dexterous metal tentacles. The enemy, now known as the Thal, vanished as quickly as it appeared. The toll was horrendous, particularly on the metahumans. Conventional weapons were nigh on useless against these armored suits, and the metahumans bore the brunt of protecting the population. Global estimates are that 2/3 of the metahuman population was eradicated on that afternoon. Now the world has put itself back together, after a fashion. Most people now carry on with their lives as normal, and are rarely concerned or confronted by the effects of the event. Commerce and travel have been re-established, but there are still swathes of destruction in every major city, and as normal, it is the poor who suffer. But the Thulians are not gone. Random suicide squads of troopers appear out of nowhere, causing chaos and death. And once defeated, the technology is kept from the human race as the suits immolate and turn themselves into slag. So join the champions and follow some of the heroes who have to get by in this familiar yet subtly different world.
Welcome to another episode of Champions UK.
All right.
Hello. So, well, a very quick recap and then we'll get into it before it gets too exciting.
Ooh, too exciting.
So currently, Jim and Fadak find themselves, after chasing around sort of the East Coast a little bit, they've just slipped the guards in an old Second World War radar station. And find themselves in, after descending into what's obviously an old Second World War bunker below it, in a circular room with eight doors on those sort of eight major compass points around them. All the doors are ajar because on the ceiling there is heavy duty cabling, maybe a good 6 inches sort of in circumference, running through each of the doorways, and one of the corridors they'd already sort of perused because there's an unconscious Thulian guard in it now because Fadak beat seven shades out of him.
Yep.
But yes, I'm not sure if I overstressed or understressed last time. So the cabling on the roof looks new, almost like this is maybe...
Maybe this is
a hob for all this cabling, but you can't tell what's the feed maybe and what's the subsidiaries. And although the doors dominate the room because they surround it all, the walls are brick, but they've been whitewashed, maybe sort of lightly plastered, but damp and age, you know, there's the peeling in places, slight hints of mould, and it's some smells... Maybe slightly musty, not bad, but you know, just that hint of, you know, is you're underground, if you like. I had the map in the wrong cardinal direction, so the guard had come from the northeast, and Thadak, you'd taken him out in the corridor. Well, he'd come through a door, which now you can see, you know, sort of light spilling out of that door, and it's the same light as lighting this area from these sort of strange, solid-looking ceiling panels that don't seem to, unlike maybe a modern-day ceiling panel where you could see the strength of the bulbs from different, you know, areas. They just look to be sort of completely uniformly lit.
Okay.
But yeah, you can see a hint of a room that he came out of, but he's left the door ajar. And yeah, sorry, just to reiterate, the doors are all, they're obviously originals, shall we say. They're sort of heavy-duty. Metal doors, green painted, sort of a central disc, you know, to sort of lock and unlock them. They're obviously blast proof doors. But as I say, they're all, so far, they're all ajar to let the cable through.
Okay. Do we see what he was guarding then? Or do you want to look elsewhere, Jim?
Yeah, lead on.
Leon McDuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Step into that corridor.
Yeah, as you sort of step in. Well, as you step into that corridor, you're probably stood in it, to be honest, Fathak, over the unconscious form of this, sorry, what is obviously a Thulian guard. Just roll me a perception, actually.
That's okay. Because
I don't think you checked him or anything. And
So... 7. That's perception. Made it by lots.
Okie dokie. So yeah, the guard at your feet is obviously a Thulian, and you can smell that sort of strange odour they have.
Vinegary.
Yeah, sort of vinegary. Not the sort of odour you've come across in our natural world. So really sort of somewhat acidic. But you see, yeah, his uniform is very sort of human-ish, you know, the styling of it. At first you thought it was black, but you can actually, now you're sort of on top of him, you can tell it's actually a really, really deep, dark green, so it's not black.
Right, okay.
Apart from that, you know, just with sort of this cursory glance as you pass him, really, you see that, you know, on one hip, he seems to have some sort of, you know, utility belt, some sort of belt. On one hip, he has... He has, well, it's a long 10-inch rod of some sort. It's got a grip on one end, so it's obviously some sort of baton type thing.
Okay.
And on the other hip, he has the rather sort of Art Deco-styled, smooth-lined blasters, I suppose is the best word for them.
Right, okay. Proper alien tech blaster.
Yeah, it almost looks childlike in its simplicity.
It's like a 50s... sci-fi movie gone wrong.
It does.
Right, well, I'll take the rod and the blaster off him, through the blaster in my waistband. So, in fact, I'm going to strip him out of his uniform.
Can you just roll me another perception? So for the purpose of that, you know, because you said you didn't sort of say you were searching him, I sort of did it like a passive thing, but if you're stripping him then...
Well... I was sort of going to step over him, but then it's like, my curiosity has been piqued.
Yeah.
No chance. It's a giant bee.
So as you strip him of his uniform...
I'm looking to see if his genitalia's in what I'd expect to be the right place. That's why I rolled a 17 and I'm not noticing anything else.
Oh, I see, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so as you strip him, if you remember, they're quite, you know, the couple you've seen are quite, and he matches the same thing, but you would assume he's some sort of soldier. So maybe it's just because they're soldiers. You know, although he's taller than the average human, you know, he's about 6'4". And although he seems quite slender build, he's still very, you know, his musculature is quite heavy. And you're distracted because, you know, his genitalia is equally as elongated as the rest of his body. And you can't help but feel just a little intimidated by the size of his penis.
I'm not bothered about size. I just want to know where it is where I can stick my kneecap.
It does, yeah. His genitalia does look like it's in the right place for a human, anyway.
It's not under his armpit, is it?
Yeah.
No.
It's all right.
Because if Fathax is under his armpit, then it wouldn't be in the same place as Fathax.
Sorry, it's just something I heard.
My extra one's under my armpit.
Jim, as he strips him, could you just roll me a perception? Unless you're doing anything specific.
Ooh, made it. Five.
Oh my god. The thing you notice most, Jim, as you watch him, is apart from the noise Fathax making peeling this guy's clothes off, is the place is eerily quiet. You know, you assume that these heavy blast doors are probably, you know, any sound from the other side of them, it would just kill it dead anyway, but there's not even any humming from the lighting or anything. And yeah, the blast doors aren't properly closed, but you know, you think you might hear something through them.
So did you take the baton from him?
I did, yeah.
All right, okay.
And within the blaster.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe I might have a look at using a weapon.
Excellent. Right, yeah. So I'm going to go up to the door. Okay. And
can I just double check, are you two invisible at the moment?
I am, because I came down the ladder and I haven't done anything yet.
And Father was when he came down.
I'm not.
Yeah.
It takes all my power pool to do that. So I've got stealth. I'm going to, stealth up to the door and see if I can see anything through the crack of the door where the cable's going through.
You roll me a stealth. Let me know how much you make it by.
On it.
So as you sort of move as silently as you can up to the door and start to peer through it, we're going to just change a little bit, because I think we're gonna cut over to somewhere else just to add a little bit of drama.
Ooh.
We cut away from them and we see like a lecture hall at the end of a lecture. You know, it's obviously the sort of the lecture is ending, students, you know, closing their books and packing up. But the energy and enthusiasm of the students is almost tangible, you know, the atmosphere of them being enamoured with whatever the subject is. And the professor, a lecture stand, is already surrounded by students vying for his attention. And in some ways, the scene's more like groupies surrounding a performer than a lecturer and students. And the lecturer looks somewhat familiar, and he should, because it's Professor Jim Morrison.
Ooh.
Jim's popularity with his students is well-earned. Not only is he a master at his own subject, his lectures are inspired, bolstered by his stage presence. He also cares for his students. He pushes the most talented to strive for even harder and higher goals, supports those who are less gifted at the subject to make sure that they pass successfully. And his winning personality makes him a favourite, and his handsome features have resulted in more than a few student crushes, both male and female.
That's a lie.
The faculty are almost as enamoured of him as the students are. The one reservation they have is that he does allow himself to get just a little too close to the students, often attending student events and even the odd student house party.
Also a lie.
Not if you read your backstory.
Unfortunately, his wife and children aren't quite so enamoured of his celebrity status with the students.
I don't know what's wrong
with it. It's not that Jim's an awful husband or father. It's just that he gets carried away with his passion for his job and his revelry in his popularity. And that results in forgotten lunch appointments, myths' birthdays, and being exhausted when he gets home. Leona has tried to keep things alive. She still loves him. It's just all she and the kids get is a shell of their husband and father. She's lost count of the number of times that she's turned up to the university to have lunch with Jim, and he's just never arrived. In fact, she saw more of Bertram Foxley, the poor chap who ended up chasing around the campus looking for Jim, until one afternoon, as Leona, on the verge of tears, asked him if he could go and find Jim. And finally, he said no. He wasn't going to chase around the university looking fruitlessly for Jim yet again. And Leona wasn't going to go without lunch yet again. And for several months after that, they went for lunch together every time Jim forgot. Which was every time. Until finally, Leona not only booked a table for lunch, but also a room for the afternoon.
Oh, the cow.
And so we cut to a rather wild student house party, with a little clutch of students gathered around Jim, who's basking in their adoration and occasional flirting from some of the students. Jim's more than comfortable with sharing a few drinks with the students, a few saucy comments, and even the odd recreational pill. Though he also knows when to draw the line. So when he woke up in the early hours of the morning, lights streaming in through the curtains, and found himself rising up from the pile of coats from the party the night before, he was rather filled with horror, as he realised he couldn't remember what had gone off last night. But that shock faded into complete insignificance when he finally approached the bathroom and saw his own reflection. Just a little bit of backstory for Jim.
Great. That was great, Mark.
But has it finished yet?
Oh.
So, yes, we cut back to Thule and whatever it is. And yeah, as you peek through the door, Fathak, you see there's another one of these big sort of lighting panels on the roof. It's bright, but not harsh, like fluorescent light. See, there's a rectangular room, sparsely furnished. There's a desk, a chair, and a small corner table. All the furniture is like a deep bottle green and seems to be made from like one piece, you know, almost like moulded. There's a single, you know, single piece, in fact. Corner table has what appears to be maybe the Thulean equivalent of some sort of coffee or drinks machine. It's like there's several cups and a bowl, half a dozen sort of golf ball-sized virulent blue fruit, and several items, you know, strewn across the desk. Like, you know, well, it looks like a bloody security guard's desk, really. What can we say? It's only a little room, maybe 12 foot across, 10 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Just enough room for the desk.
Okay.
But yes, there is nobody else in here. He was obviously stationed here alone.
Mm-hmm. All right. In that case, there's nothing in there, gym boy. Just work around clockwise. Go to that door, have a listen.
Yeah, roll me a perception.
Still silent. Made it by one.
No, you don't hear anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Give it a shove open.
Yeah, so you just pull it open. Obviously, and they pull it into this central room, obviously, presumably. Right. So, yeah, if there was blast, would force them closed rather than open.
Mm-hmm.
And you see in front of you a darkened corridor. You know, you can faintly see at the far end that there's another one of these blast doors, you know, from the light coming in from the main room. Also, sorry, to the right and left, just by that blast door, you see there are openings, you know, just like arch openings in the side, you know, it's obviously leading into another area, but you can't see, it's too dark.
Right, okay. So, I'm going to go invisible. I'm going to go up.
So as you step into the corridor, again, you see this, you know, the ceiling panels there, and as you step into the corridor, they begin to light up. If you remember, ooh, when you came into the main thing, they didn't just pop into full brightness. They sort of come up quite quickly, but they're obviously designed not to dazzle you as they turn on.
So I'm invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder how it detected me.
Because it's alien tech.
Yeah, I know.
So, Jim, are you hanging back in the main room then?
No, I'm going to follow him through.
See, as you go down the corridor, Fathak, you realise that, yeah, again, this is the same. You know, the walls are obviously brick with, you know, some sort of light plaster and whitewash over them. You know, it's dirty and muddy with age and is starting to peel in places and bubble. But the blast door in front of you still looks sound. In fact, you think the behind the plaster and the paint, you're sure the walls are sound as well.
They're solid.
Yeah, it's more the veneer to make it, you know, yep, look nice when it was first put together is going. But yeah, you see the two archways opening up, one to your right and one to your left of the blast door.
Yep, so I'll appear into the one to the right.
And again, this sort of lighting comes ambient on in both sides. So yeah, to your left, you can see like the heavy-duty cables run into there.
Mm-hmm.
And against the west wall, there's like rows of shelving up to the ceiling. Again, made of this same sort of, what looks almost like some sort of, you know, dark green resin. And again, they seem to be formed of one piece.
Mm-hmm.
But on them is what you would say is probably some sort of incubators. You know, dark green base, clear top.
Yeah.
But you can see some of the cabling is running into them, obviously giving them some sort of power. And inside them, you can see this row upon row of various seedlings growing. They all look particularly, to your human eye, particularly sickly, you know, strange, unhealthy-looking colours. And
it definitely looks plant-like and not, you know, creature-like.
Yeah, it certainly looks like plant-like. You can, I mean, you'd be able to see, you know, there's some sort of, they're growing out of some sort of loam or soil or whatever. Yeah. And to the right is what looks like almost a, it's a cubicle, again, made of the same resin type stuff. But the front is, has a clear, is, you know, whether it's glass or some sort of perspex. And it's open, and on the right-hand side, you can see what must be some sort of control panel, and below it, some sort of opening, like, you know, maybe you'd put something, you know, like a cartridge or something in there. You know, it looks sort of reminiscent of some sort of sci-fi vending machine.
Okay.
Or sci-fi shower cubicle, whichever you prefer.
I was thinking more shower cubicle. Interesting.
Because, yeah, you think you could easily step into that space. It's about 2 meters wide by 2 meters deep by, you know, sort of 2.5 meters high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Is this blast door at the end ajar?
No, this cabling? Blast door at the end is actually closed.
Right. All right, Red Jim, this door here is not open. Do you want to leave it for now, or should we try and open it?
Is it locked or is it just closed?
Dunno.
Yeah, let's go through it. Let's try it.
I'll try and open it.
So yeah, you grab hold of the, you know, the circular, you know, mechanism.
Yeah, give it a spin.
What's your strength, Fathak? It's high, isn't it?
So normally it's 15.
Oh, so it's above average human. It feels a bit stiff and it's obviously a heavy mechanism in the door, but you twist it and feel the mechanism clunk open.
Okay, I'll open the door.
So as you start opening the door, just roll me a perception.
Made it by 7.
As soon as the door cracks away from the jamb, first of all, you notice light comes out. You also feel a wave of heat rise up your arms. Not burning heat, you know, hot summer's day sort of heat.
Okay, so it's not like I've opened an oven.
No, no. And it's not only hot, it's really humid. You know, you can feel the moisture in the air.
Okay. Could be a subterranean greenhouse. All right. Yep, I carry on opening the door.
So, yeah, you pull the door open. And, yeah, do you know what? Something I've been really bad at since we started the UK bit. Can you both give yourself a hobnob, please?
Excellent.
I meant to do it before. I'm really sorry because I really like the way you haven't just used your obvious abilities to just knock down every obstacle. Fathak, can you give yourself a second one? Because as you pull this door open and the heat and humidity hits you, You see, yeah, it's not the biggest room in the world. It's maybe 4 or 5 meters deep, about 6 or 8 meters wide. So big enough, but not huge.
Yep.
And yeah, you can see that the back wall is just a mass of vines. Can you just roll me a deduction, but you get a bonus for this.
Okie dokie.
So, yeah, if you fail it, just let me know how much by as well.
So I don't have deduction. So let's just have a look. Well, I roll 12.
12. So, yeah, what's your perception? How much would you have made your perception by?
I would have made my perception by 2.
Okay, so yeah, the back wall is just covered in these, in this thick vine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's glimpses of the wall behind the vine. You reckon it might be about a foot deep.
Right, okay.
But you realise, yeah, it's this sort of this reddy, purpley vine, you know, the strands and the leaves. You realise it looks very similar to that vine that was on the Thulian's tattoo. Maybe it might be the same thing. Yeah. Yep. And then in front of it are several benches with accoutrements on them, obviously for gardening. You know, it's various half-potted plants and all that sort of stuff. And as you open the door up, and there's a Thulian stood there with his blaster pointing at you, you see him look a bit quizzical. And then we go into initiative, because he is going to fire,
yeah.
Because it's a bit odd.
We're both of us on 3, 6, 9, 12.
You act first. As he looks quizzically and obviously wonders why the bloody hell this door's opened up. I mean, there's no automation on this door. You can see there's no sort of you know, electronics or anything on it. So you realise you've got a second to act. And luckily, you have it.
Can I see him?
Right.
Just roll me a perception and don't fail it abysmally. Because Fathak is quite a big bloke, isn't he? And he's in your
way. Invisible.
Oh, of course you are. Yeah, of course you can see him,
right.
Jim.
There he is.
There's nothing blocking you and him.
All right. So, I'm going to do
So yeah, I think Jim, I think you're slightly faster than Fathak, aren't you? If you're attacking mentally.
Yeah. So ego attack. See if I can stun him a little bit.
I'm gonna hit him first.
I know. I ain't got my glasses on, so I can't see anything. So my OCV is not my OCV. It's my ECV, isn't it? 8 or lower.
Yeah, yeah, you feel that mental tunnel open up as it was.
It's not normal damage.
Yeah, normal damage will do the trick.
All right, okay.
You just don't do any body knockback, do you? They do 21 stun on him. So, yeah, you blast him, and yeah, you see his head rock back, and yeah, a little bit of. And his eyes roll a little, but he certainly doesn't go down, Fathak.
Okay, so I am going to trace the tattoo of the Fomor's legs to give me dexterity. So obviously I drop my invisibility to do so. Bing!
Here I am.
And pizza for Thulian. That's 4d6. Spreadsheet that works all this out for me. 1 second. So, excellent. So that's put my dex up to 24.
Oh, brilliant. From...
From?
Yeah, what was
I've
it?
I've got to put it back now.
No, what was it?
No.
18, I'm guessing? No, 20.
20.
Yeah, 20 to 24. And then, yeah, do your worst.
Well, that's what I've done this round.
Hey, remember, you can invoke as many abilities as you want.
I know, but if you're trying to spend all your points in one to get the maximum effect...
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you can't...
Then I haven't got the gumption to do it.
So that was segment 3. Segment 4, he acts.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to shoot you, but he doesn't have that massive bonus he had if he'd have got your drop on you. Oh, God, DCV 7?
No, because it's now 8.
Well, hey! So you finish tracing your tattoo, and there's that extra little you slip by the blow. And the angle means that they couldn't shoot down the corridor and hit Jim, obviously.
Oh, good.
So. We jump straight to segment 6, because I'm not going to count the ones that I know no one acts on. Jim, it's you.
It's hard. Just going to do the same.
Okay, so which is?
So I'm going to do a ego blast.
Yeah, when you do your ego blast, how do you imagine that looking?
Straight into his brain. I'm just going to imagine his brain and just like boom, like a spear. And that is, it's only 15 this time.
So 15 stone. Again, yeah, you see him. Rock, you know, his eyes are becoming bloodshot, but doesn't take him out. steadies his weapon for another shot. Fathak?
Okay, so now I am going to trace...
When do you act on there, Fathak? Is your signature change?
No, because my dex hasn't got enough to change my speed.
Right, okay.
No, speed's still 4. No, dex would have to go... I have to spend a lot of CP to be able to do it. Yeah, I mean, if I rolled 4d6 on that tattoo, I still wouldn't have enough points to get upper speed. Anyway. I'm going to now trace the Fomor's heart tattoo to give me strength. Yeah, fucking dirty alien bastard. Oh, 19, so...
I think it's a point per point, isn't it, for strength? Doesn't that put your strength up 19 points?
To me, an extra 3d6.
Yeah.
66 base strength now. And that's all I was doing again that round. That segment, rather.
Yeah, so you've traced your tattoo. Does it make you look bigger, or is it just sort of...
No.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, your tattoo flares, but...
Yeah, because it's not me, it's the power... contained within the tattoo.
He tries to shoot again.
He's missing again. Oh, you missed.
CCV9?
Yeah, hits.
So yeah, this time he hits. You know, the way he's moving, he's obviously a trained, you know, soldier. He's not just some bloke with a gun.
Can you abort to dodge?
You can always abort to dodge.
I'll abort to dodge.
Okay, so that... Well, what does that make your DCV? It's plus 2, isn't it?
So I'm on... So that's 10.
Yes.
So you misses.
You manage to move out the way. Just. It skims you, but... Yeah, you feel its heat, but that's all. Yeah. Jim, it's you again on segment 9. Oh, are you sidestepping into the corridor while you can?
That's just where I dodged to.
Ah, yeah, of course.
Just for show.
So, mind blast him again.
And you're still invisible, aren't you, Jim? So he's got no idea you're there. Because you're invisible to sight, sound, and touch, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. DCV of 9, you easily connect with his mind again.
As you mangle his brain in your wrestling moves.
16.
Yeah, and again, you know, his head rocks back and his eyes bloody further. He looks quite confused. He obviously doesn't know what's going on, but... Also, as you're blasting him with this sort of stuff, you know, you're an experienced agent. He's obviously far more robust mentally than your average human being.
Mm.
I mean, you're having an effect and still quite a dramatic one over time, but you think, you know, any normal human, you'd have put into a bloody coma by now. Oh, sorry, Fathak, it would be you, but you dodged.
Aborted to dodge.
So it's segment 12, so everyone acts on 12, and then there's recovery and all that sort of stuff. So, Jim, it's you again. But just keep an eye on your endurance.
Remember. Yeah, I know, yeah. 8 or lower.
Yeah, you easily connect to his mind. The problem that you realise, you know, with at least with this Thule and the other ones you've faced, they're no harder to make that connection with than a human being.
Hmm.
It's just their resilience once you've made the connection that's the problem.
Right. 24.
Yeah, but this time anger fuels you and just his eyes all go almost pure red and then roll up into his head and he collapses onto the floor.
I had a flashback of a professor sleeping with my wife.
Oh, you don't know about that, remember?
Came to me, made me really angry. I don't know.
I was just winding up to give him the fucking Malky.
So yeah, going back to that flashback, you probably would have known that they built up a friendship.
Yeah.
And you might even have suspicions, but you don't know all the information there. Not yet, anyway. So, and yeah, he crumples to the floor. But as you squeeze his mind again, as he drops, he's just fluttering on the edge of consciousness.
It's all yours, Fallak.
Okay. I'll spin round the open doorway and smack him while he's on the floor.
Yeah, so you spin round, punch him, just roll your damage. You do times 2 stun because he's unconscious.
Okay. So that's 70 stun, 10 body.
Are you fussed whether you kill him or not?
He's just tried to fucking shoot me.
So you do 70 stun, yeah. You hit him at his face, you know, he's nose explodes, lip breaks open, and a bruising on his face almost appears. You sure you feel his cheek break, but he isn't dead. But he's going to be out for a while. You think maybe he probably wants hospitalising. The heat from this room has just permeated. It's obviously dropping because the door behind you into that main room is open and it's diffusing a bit. But as you suspected, Fathak, it seems to be some sort of, even though there's no light apart from these lighting panels, seems to be some sort of, you know, underground greenhouse. There's this huge grapevine across the back and then sort of these couple of trellis tables, you know, for obviously, you know, tending and watering and all that sort of stuff. And a few rows of bedded, strange-looking plants. Some of them have got this sort of same sort of blue fruit that you saw in that bowl in the guards' room.
I'll get my phone out, take some photos. Click, 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 click. Take some photos of the mushed-up Thulian. Click, click, click.
Yep.
Then I'll drag him to the shower and put him in there.
Oh, right, yeah. That's the shower, what shower?
Yeah.
Can you just roll me... Do you have any luck ability at all?
So I do. I have the luck of the Irish, but it's combat luck.
But it's what? Okay.
It gives me PD and ED.
It does indeed. How many points have you got in it?
I've spent 12 points in it, so I get 6 PD, 6 ED.
So can you roll me 3D6?
11.
So there you go in. Grab him out. So you're dragging him round to this sort of strange cubicle thing.
Yeah.
Just roll me a perception while you're in there as well. Unless you're planning on going back and exploring. I'm assuming that you're just moving on, so.
Yeah, unless I explicitly say we're just scooting around quickly.
So did you fail your perception?
On it.
Do you notice that, you know, on these trellis, they're not literally trellis tables, you know, just sort of giving a sort of, you know, there's like some sort of shelving underneath it. You see that some of them have what look like maybe foot long, 8 or 10 inches diameter cartridges, for want of a better word.
Did they look like they'd fit in these battens?
No, they're too big for the battens. Yeah, the battens are like, you know, if you imagine like a police baton that maybe an inch or two across, these things are like about 10 inches across, six to 8 inches across, maybe. Almost like a big artillery shell.
Mm-hmm. Maybe fit in the hole in the shower.
Yeah, you do think they might fit that.
Mm, interesting. Photos of them, so...
Just roll me another perception.
Made it by 9.
So, yeah, as you take photos of them, and then, you know, you take a photo of one of those, and it leads you to take a photo of something else interesting, you realise that, actually, that large vine on the back wall...
is moving.
As you follow things along... there seems to be taps set into it. You know, like you bleed sap from something. And then there's, little small pipes leading into, what's a collection, must be some sort of collection container, which then in turn obviously feeds these cartridges. So these cartridges must be full of whatever, you know, sap or whatever this vine is giving off.
I wonder if the guy we fought is juiced up from sap. Fought a sap head. maybe it's just alien rubber.
So you drag him out and shove him in this
it's
quite large shower cubicle type thing. Just roll me a perception as you do that. Jim, by all means, if you are looking at anything or doing anything while I'm doing this with Father,
made it by 4.
So yeah, as you chuck him in, you notice that, you know, the back and the sides and the roof of this are this sort of this solid green resin, and the front is this clear stuff. Although it's quite subtle, it doesn't seem to be there. The workmanship doesn't seem to be trying to conceal it. It's just it's well constructed, so it looks slick, and because it's all the same colour, it's hard to see. You see, like, on the back and the right and left side and on the roof seem to be nozzles set in that seem to be able to be moved. You know, it looks like, because of the shape of them, seem rounded, you know, to go into a rounded thing into the body of the cabinet that makes them look like they're probably able to move around at angle, you know, in different directions.
Hmm. Fucking aliens. Right, carry on.
Yep, we can always investigate properly if we get time.
We can indeed.
Just rest a minute so I can get some endurance back. How long's endurance? It's when you're not fighting.
Well, a turn is 12 seconds. And if you're not doing anything, you get your recovery every segment you would act. So for you, it's 4. So you only need to take a breather for a couple of 24 seconds. You know, it is literally getting your breath back, isn't it? It's not.
Okay. So do you think that was a food source for them?
I'm not really sure. I don't know if it's a food source or a power source. That guy had tats of the vines on him, so whether they worship it, I don't know. Could be like herb to them. Maybe we've found some intergalactic Rastafarians.
Yeah, go back and try smoking the vine.
No, thank you. Don't touch that shit.
So you head back into that main circular room you came down into, yeah. Now it's a bit warmer in here, but yeah, it's still quiet.
So I'm going to go invisible and then open this door here, southeast.
And yeah, you see a relatively short corridor, about 10, 12 feet long, and another set of blast doors at the other end. Again, these doors are slightly ajar with the, you know, the sort of the cables running along the ceiling and into.
Can't sense mind unless I can, I've.
Remember, when you're invisible, people can't do things to you. You can still use your abilities.
I was thinking about something about line of sight, but it was something about if you roughly know where somebody's going to be.
Yeah. If you've got a damn good educated guess, you can scan an area. Yeah.
So I'm going to go down this corridor.
Are you taking the lead?
Yeah. Only for a few seconds. And I'm going to imagine that that's a similar size room to the other one and search for mines in there.
Yeah, roll me your scan.
Activation roll, 11.
That means you have to roll 3d6 to activate it.
Yeah.
So you have to get under 11, and then your mind scan is 2d6.
So 10.
So yeah, you are able to reach out with your mind. Just roll me your 2d6.
6.
Your mind doesn't detect anything.
Falak, you can go through there. There's nobody in there.
Well, you're fairly certain there is nobody in there. You know, you know your mind scan isn't foolproof.
Yeah. I don't think there's anybody in there. There could be.
I'll open the door.
So again, it's ajar, you know, with the cables running in. Sorry, Jim, as you entered that corridor, the lights would have flickered on. I do apologise. So you're probably both fairly safe to realise without having to make a roll that whatever triggers the lighting can pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're only invisible to sight and sound. You know, it could be infrared or ultraviolet or anything.
I'm invisible to sight, hearing, smell, taste, mental and touch. It's got to be something like
ultraviolet, infrared.
Yeah. Life force.
Because sight is just normal human sight. So yeah, you pull the door open, and as you pull it open, the light bleeds in. You see it's, you know, sort of slightly strange shaped room. I don't know what you call that shape. It's not quite square. The corners are cut off. It's the same, you know, whitewashed walls, slightly, you know, deteriorating. You can see there's a light panel in the ceiling, but it hasn't come on yet, presumably because you haven't come in. But the only thing in this room, sat facing each other, are two, for want of a better word, statues. They seem to be Art Deco styled, but cast in metal. Wolves, both sat on their haunches, you know, their forelegs, you know, straight, both heads up, looking quite proud, facing each other across the room.
Odd.
No metagaming. You haven't seen anything like this before. And also, you know, sat like that. Father, they probably come up to, their heads probably come up to about your chin. They're big. And then they look beautiful. You know, they are this sort of stylized, you know, maybe not to your taste, but, you know, perfectly crafted. They look like polished daily.
They're wolves, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not alien, weird.
No, no, they look
representations like of something that might be wolfy. Weird. There's nothing else in here, though, is there?
Nothing else.
There's no other doors, is there? So no. I'll step away from the door. In fact, I'll drop my invisibility and say, there's some weird statues in there. Probably some of, I don't know, some World War II lost treasure or something. I don't know. Fucking weirdos.
Yeah, they do.
And I'll step out of the room.
Very silvered. They could be made of precious metal.
Actually, I'll take a photo. Click. I'll leave.
Takes you a minute or two because the glare off of them, they are, you know, you realise they are ridiculously highly polished.
Mm.
But yeah, you finally get a decent photo, you know, you come out.
So, to the next one in the south.
Just shut this door.
Yeah, Jim, something obviously made you feel a bit uneasy about them, so you shut the door. You can't shut it properly because there's this heavy cable going through it. You could try and slam it shut and break
where
the cable.
Where did the cable go to? Did you see?
Into the room?
Or into the light panels, I suppose.
Yeah, it seemed to... You didn't really notice, Falak. Yeah, those statues took your attention. You didn't really notice where the cable went. Yeah, you noticed it was on the ceiling somewhere, but that was all.
All right, okay.
Right.
Should we just go clockwise, south door now?
Yep, absolutely. Around the clock. So, going invisible, open the door.
Okay, so yeah, you creak the door open. Oh yeah, sorry, apologies. Please, just as you open these doors, the ones that are ajar, just roll me a stealth. I don't have to keep asking you. This one is moot, as you can obviously see at the moment. Yeah, so you push it open and you see the corridor. Same bricked corridor, extend down before you.
Does that turn to the
You can see
west?
That it turns, you know, there's an archway to the right. There is actually another door directly opposite you. I just haven't put it on the map, apologies.
I made my stealth by 2.
Yeah, so you managed to open it pretty quietly. And you do think, actually, you know, these are old doors and, you know, they show the weathering and age of being from the Second World War, but they probably have been maintained because, yeah, they do open. The ones you're not having to open the mechanism on are opening pretty slickly, quiet. Yeah.
So, how long has it been since we had our tussle in the vine room?
A minute. Oh, no, you went into the room and you took some photos, maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
Right.
Okay. It's really, really your call.
Yeah, okay, that's right. It's just my
if you're thinking recovery,
decks and things like that. Well, no, my decks and that lasts for 5 minutes. Mm. So it'll run out. So I'm going to trace my tattoos in a layer, my aid.
Do you want to roll them now, or would you rather roll them?
I'll roll them now because you can, because with aid, you can keep trying it again to see if you get better dice.
Yeah,
obviously, you don't know.
Yeah.
Up until you're obviously
stack,
the max dice.
But if you roll higher, it takes you up that to the next level.
Yeah. It takes it up. That's right, yeah. So I'm going to do a couple of traces.
So how long are you going to try this for?
Well, seeing as it only takes segments. I'll spend a round doing it.
If you spend a minute or two, I would say just take the max. I'd be happy for you to take the max.
Okay, I'll do that then, because that gives you like 4 minutes of abilities. Cool, no worries. Right, now head down.
And also that extra, you know, focus you can get when you're not mid-combat.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Properly trace the fine lines of the tattoo to invoke its power.
So yeah, as you step into that southern corridor again, the same routine, you know.
Invisible.
The lighting comes on. And as you move towards the door at the end, you see the archway to the right opens up. And you can see, although it's slightly odd, it might have served some other purpose at some point, but it's effectively two very small rooms divided by a piece of wall, but they're completely empty at the moment.
Okay. Open this door then.
Yeah, just roll me a stealth for that. And
I'm going to sense mines.
made a stealth by 2. Actually, my dex has gone up to 28, so my stealth would have gone up.
So yeah, Jim, as you reach out with your mind, you know,
yeah,
obviously you're underground and the thickness of the, you know, the earth, and you've got this blast door, even though it's ajar, it's obviously interfering somewhat, and you can't quite penetrate.
What she said.
So sorry, Fadak, I missed what your stealth was.
Made it by 4, because my stealth is now 16.
So yeah, as you push the door open, again, you know, the room is only lit by the light from the corridor initially. You see a room similar to the size of the one where the vines and plants were,
mm-hmm.
Except it's the walls and there's also a couple of freestanding shelves. It's just the walls are lined with shelving. There's a couple of freestanding shelves as well. You see they're all just filled with various barrels and containers. It's obviously some sort of storeroom, but all the containers, again, and the shelving are made of this
resin.
Yeah, this stuff. Dark green resin. And the crates, you see, seem to have some sort of symbolism on a hexagonal-shaped label. Again, with these sort of strange, sort of organic-themed hieroglyphs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gonna
click, click, click.
Yeah, take video of it. I'm going to try and learn this language. So, one of the boxes, take a photo of the label, open it.
And if you imagine it's like, what do you call it? Those sort of jars where you have those lids that you pop. Kilner, it breaks
like
a seal.
Jar. Like a kilner jar.
Pop that and it could
Or a grosch bottle.
Yeah, a grosch bottle, yeah. And yeah, you open it up and inside it seems to be packed full of, obviously wrapped in some sort of plastic or something similar, sort of shrink wrapped, just bars and bars of stuff, 4 or 5 inches long, you know, an inch square, and the whole crate just seems to be full of them.
Right, like food stuff.
It might be.
Mm. Give it a taste.
Give it Falak to lick.
Not eating any of that foreign muck.
Right, I think we'll leave this. I'm a bit nervous of it. Let's go back.
Okay. But yeah, certainly the feel of the room is it's some sort of, you know, storeroom. It's very organised. And exactly what they're storing. Up for debate.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you Falak. Slowly retreat back to that that central route, circular room. And, you know, so also I haven't said that, you know, as you come out those corridors and everything, the light slowly dims and then goes out again.
Right, okay. Same routine. Next door.
Okay, so you go for the
southwest.
West. Oh, man. Let me take a breath. Okay. So yeah, just roll me a stealth as you push it open.
Made it by 9.
You open it pretty quietly. You see, there's a very short corridor in front of you. Corridor's probably overstating it, to be honest. It's and it just opens up into a bit, sort of a bigger area. And from the light that, is filtering in, you can see stacked in here unceremoniously seems to be bits of old desks and furniture, shelving, bins, telephones. It looks like possibly the original, accoutrements of this whole place have just been gathered together and shoved
in this one room.
They all look very, very dated.
Okay, ignore that, go to the next one. West door.
So just roll me a stealth.
Made it by 10.
Made it by 10, Jesus, stealthy.
Mm.
So yeah, you push it open. And again, the light fills another arched, whitewashed corridor for maybe 5 or 6 meters, possibly. And you can see that the light then diffuses into an open space, which appears empty. You know, you can just see vague, as it sort of filters out into darkness on, sort of all sides.
Okay, so I'm invisible. I'll go down the corridor.
Okay. So yeah, you sort of come in and the lights come on again into the corridor, and you see there's another circular room, very similar to the one you've come out of. To the north is just a small, it's not really a corridor, it's a space. Also directly across from you to the west is another space, and then to the south there is a blast door. You could maybe even surmise that, because of the circular nature of the place, that maybe these spaces are purely for backing things into, so you can
maneuver stuff
like
around.
A turning point, someone could come in, move into one place, and although that, there's no tracks in the ground or anything.
Head over to this door in the south.
I'll sense mine. Is it ajar?
No, this one is not ajar.
11.
So your activation roll's 11, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, you activate it.
I rolled 11.
That's what you need.
Yeah, you can't sense anything.
Let's go for it.
Okay, open it.
Your strength is enhanced at the moment as well, isn't it? So yeah, you easily,
it is. Yeah. I have a strength of 39.
So yeah, you open it up and you see again a corridor leading off into darkness.
The lights come on as...
How long do your boosts last for? Just to give me a rough idea. I'll let you know if I think they're about to drop. I won't be that
bad. So, like I say, we're going to spend a minute getting them up to max.
Yeah.
They last for 5 minutes. So I assume, 4 minutes after.
Yeah, I would say when you're opening this door, you're thinking, because if you've scanned the rooms and you had a bit of a look around, and like you're probably getting towards the end of, you probably want to take stock again before you get down here. And so you revamp them. That's fine. As long as you take a minute or two to do it.
That's all do.
So as you go into this corridor again, the lighting, sort of panels light up down the corridor. This is considerably longer than sort of any corridor you've been in. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. It's about 20 meters long. You see that it then begins to bend to the, it takes a bend to the left, so you can't quite see around the corner. You haven't got deduction, have you? Can you both roll me 3d6,
no,
please?
14, so probably not.
12.
Okie dokie. So yeah, you see it kink round to the, slightly to the left at about sort of a 45 degree angle.
Dog leg.
That's it, just silence. And the faintly rising temperature from that other... Oh no, you closed the door, didn't you? On the greenhouse room, if you want.
No.
Did you not? So yeah, you notice the temperature is slowly rising.
Yeah, Jim closed the door on the statue.
He did, that's right, yeah.
For some reason.
So yeah, as you sort of get to the corner, Falak, you see it goes on maybe another 10 feet or so, and then ends in another blast door that's closed.
Hmm. You going to go up to that door, Falak?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm there.
Okay. Where? Sense map.
Okay, roll your activation. So yeah, you try and reach out. You think maybe the blast door and maybe the thickness of the walls and all that is just interfering too much because this one's closed.
I'll just open it.
So yeah, you... Strength is well up there now, isn't he? Spin it with one hand. And you open it up. So it opens up into a larger space. So yeah, as you swing the door open, instantly apparent that a room is lit. It's a pretty large room, 20 meters long, 6 meters wide. Around the walls, etc., are, you know, there's various sort of you know, things on the walls or benches. It looks like some sort of workshop. You know, there's tools and trolleys, those sort of caddy things. Mm-hmm. But sort of swinging their heads round, you know, sort of obviously doing whatever they're doing in here, are two more Thulians, again in this, you know, dark bottle green uniform, beginning to reach for their weapons. Just roll me a perception.
Okay. Made it by 5.
Jim?
I'm on it.
You're on it. You see that sort of interspaced around the walls are alcoves. They've obviously been repurposed. They are obviously part of the original structure. But stood in each of these four alcoves is a suit of Thulian paratrooper armor.
Mm.
And at the far end looks like a massive set of blast doors, the sort of blast doors that might be used for entrance and egress.
Mm.
And that, gentlemen, is where we're going to leave it for this session. Bye. You've been listening to Chimpions. Fathak was played by Scott. Jim was played by Paul. And your GM was Mark. You can follow us on Twitter at ChimpionsRPG. Find us on Facebook as Chimpions. Email us at mark@chimpions.co.uk. If you enjoyed the show, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you want to help us improve the show, you can consider leaving us a one-off donation by finding us on GoFundMe. Or if you'd like to help us out on a more long-term basis, you could find us on Patreon as Chimpions. Thank you for listening. Hope you join us again. Bye.